Thinking Liberty, episode 28.
Welcome to Thinking Liberty, the podcast that explores lifestyles of freedom-minded individuals. Join us as we discuss work, hobbies, health, learning, and more while living a travel-orientated lifestyle. Be curious, be open, be inspired, be free. And now, here are your hosts, Zach and Sarah Varnell.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Thinking Liberty. As always, I'm Zach.
And I'm Sarah.
Today we're bringing you an interview we did with Bryn Drescher, where she's going to talk about really marrying your love of travel with your career and finding ways to do that where possible. I know that's something that Sarah and I have been doing for a while, you know, dating back to before we were even married. I worked for a nonprofit, and that nonprofit had conferences they like to go to. So it was nice back then to be able to see, you know, the list of conferences and be able to choose a couple of them to go to. And, you know, Sarah would even come on and learn to do the tabling for the nonprofit and be able to go with me. So that was always nice.
Yeah, and not to dive too much into the topics of our interview today, but there really are opportunities to still have a love for travel and a passion for travel and be able to take advantage of opportunities where you find them, even if you're still passionate about your career and want to have a successful job path, you know, if that's your focus and that's your end goal. It doesn't have to be an either or. And so that's kind of a cool thing about this interview. She talks about how you can find opportunities to find jobs that focus on travel. You know, maybe you're doing a lot of speaking gigs or you're going to conferences like we've done in the past. So there's many different ways and opportunities. So it's kind of interesting to get that take on it and that look at it instead of just focusing on how you can work less and travel more, you know. So it was a good interview, I think.
Yep. So let's go ahead and go into our interview with Bryn Drescher.
Well, hi Bryn, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us. I know you have a very busy schedule, so we really appreciate you taking the time.
Oh no, absolutely, happy to be here with you guys.
So why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself and your story, just some background information for the listeners.
Yeah, so I am originally from Chicago, and I have lived in California for about 11 years. But between there, I lived in North Carolina, DC, and New Jersey. So I am quite a traveler. And then for trade, I mean, I'm a motivational speaker and basically a mindset and confidence coach. Currently using video to really help people get their message out and attract their ideal clients, because I'm really big about helping people help people. And the more that people know about them, the more people they can help.
That sounds awesome. So you really have been kind of traveling basically a large part of your life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Moving around.
Well, yeah. When I was a kid, my mom took us on vacations. I've seen most of the United States. Awesome. When I was a kid. So
with your coaching business, you kind of, you know, set your own schedule and make your own rules there a little bit. Do you work remotely or do you have a kind of office that you go into?
I work remotely. I think that's important. Anywhere that there's a internet connection in my laptop, I'm in business. And of course, I, you know, occasionally do go places to speak live because I do love the live interaction piece. But no, yeah, no office for quite a bit of years now.
That is really awesome. So how are you kind of using that to take advantage and be able to travel and experience more? I think you mentioned that you took a trip to Argentina last year.
Yes. And I have to say that world travel is new to me because I grew up as a kid from a poor family, single parent household. My mom did everything in her power to get us to see the United States. So I'm very thankful for that. So we're like explorers of the U.S., but we just didn't have the opportunity to go somewhere else. So last year, not only did I go to Argentina, but I flew first class. And that was amazing. And I was there for 2 weeks. It was just one of the best, you know, vacations I've ever had. And that was all because I didn't have to tell anybody I was taking off. I just took off.
So how did you get into working remotely? And I mean, is this the first job, your coaching job, that you've been able to work remotely, or has this kind of been a thing for you for a while?
No, definitely my first. I mean, I've been a full-time self-employed for 10 years. Well, 10 years? Yeah, 10 years. But but still not always giving myself the time to travel. I was definitely a 9-to-5-er for a good portion of my life. And I worked previously in corporate America and for like retail sales jobs. And so there was no, it was always like, I want to travel, but I don't have time. I want to travel, but when am I going to fit it in? Or, you know, when am I going to have the money to go to travel? Because it just felt like I was working to survive. And so yeah, I definitely, one of the things that attracted me to working for myself was making my own schedule and also just not kind of living according to someone else's desires or, you know, timeline. And I kind of resent that whole thing of having to ask for time off to go enjoy my life, you know?
Yep. So I feel like those reasons, those excuses you were giving that you used to have are common traps that everyone or almost everyone seems to fall into. So how did you really like get out of those and start, you know, realizing that you could set your own hours and work for yourself? And like, how did, you know, the opportunity of becoming a coach and a motivational speaker come up?
Oh, yeah. Great question. I think one of the things that really sparked it for me, though it took me a few years to really act on it, was just looking at that whole model that we were raised, many of us were raised by, which was this whole thing of like, they call it the 40-40-40 lie, where you work 40 hours a week for 40 years and retire on 40% of your pay. And like the good life starts in retirement. And I remember always having a problem with that. Like, that doesn't make sense. So I only get to enjoy my life when I'm 65 and older. I'm like, I don't know. I want to enjoy it now. And I think this is very true of millennials in particular. But what I did was I just kind of took a seat back from my life and I saw the trajectory of where I was headed. And I was like, I don't like what this looks like. I don't see where this is moving me towards. And so when I was, I remember I was working my job and I kind of thought, well, what did I want to do? And one of the things I had wanted to be was a lawyer. And I got some real world experience of working in law firms, not as an attorney, but, and I saw what they experienced and I was like, okay, that's not the life for me, because their work-life balance was even worse than my 9-to-5 jobs. But then I said, okay, what else could I do? And one of the things I've always loved is speaking, and I seem to be naturally gifted at empowering people. So I went to one of those personal development seminars, and they were teaching about speaking in particular in one of their workshops. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to take that. And ever since then, that's basically what I've been doing, is speaking and coaching and just really nailing down this entrepreneur life, which has its ups and downs financially, but is so much more rewarding because I work for myself. So that's sort of how I made the transition. And I left my job, not necessarily the best decision, but I just quit because I just realized I was in that never-ending sales trap. If you've ever had a sales job, you're only as good as your last month. So you work really, really hard for 30 days, you hit your sales goal, you feel really great, and then day one starts all over again the next day. And I was like, I just can't keep doing this. I don't love it.
So how did you first get your foot in the door and start getting those speaking gigs, and especially ones that allowed you to travel and maybe even paid for you to travel?
Well, it was, yeah, like it took a lot of kind of stepping through what a lot of, I think a few people experience, which is sort of imposter syndrome. So the biggest thing was first deciding that I had a message to share, that I could actually say something that would be of value to people, because, you know, it's sort of that idea, anyone can talk. Anyone can, you know, say stuff, maybe you might think that, or someone else might think, I'd never want to talk on a stage, which is probably more common. But what I did was I just said, okay, well, I have this ability to make people laugh, inspire them and empower them. So I actually looked for places where I could sort of volunteer first to kind of get the ropes of it and see what people do. And then I ended up working for a nonprofit that does workshops for high school and middle school kids. And then I finally started stepping out into my own gigs, where I was getting paid for one day what I would be getting paid in like a week or 2 weeks of work. And so it afforded me the ability to be able to travel and go places on a moment's notice and stay and work in those cities if I wanted to for a week or 2 weeks at a time.
That's awesome. Yeah, and I know that imposter syndrome is a very dangerous thing. And I think sometimes even after you get good at what you're doing and accepted at it, then it it's oftentimes replaced by like has-been syndrome, where you're like, oh, I'm doing this, but I'm not good at it anymore. All the, you know, up-and-comers are better than me. So those are some hard traps to get out of.
Absolutely. Well, I think the biggest thing is, I tell people this often, but it's almost good that you have imposter syndrome because only high achievers have it. So it's a good mark of who you are if you're experiencing imposter syndrome because it means you really care. Now, the key is not to stop because a real imposter doesn't care. And I don't mean doesn't care, period, but doesn't care if people think they're an imposter or not, right? They're trying to pull it off. But the key is for those of us that are like really worried that someone's going to discover that we're a fraud, it's because we care so much. And so that's one thing to remember, that it's that heart. And so if you just really lean on your why. And has-been syndrome, oh gosh, yeah, like I'm too late, I'm too this, I'm too that, I'm, you know, and it's really important to not get caught in that trap of like, well, every, you know, because technically there's nothing new under the sun, you know, there's nothing that has never been discussed pretty much. So the key is the only thing that's unique is you and your perspective. And if you can remember that, your message is going to resonate better with someone else because your language just speaks to them. I might talk to that same person. They're like, ah, she's not for me. So it's just remembering that there's an audience. It's the way I always say it is you have light and there's somebody out there in the dark and your light is specifically for them.
Yeah. It seems like it's a reverse bell curve of people who don't have imposter syndrome. It's like, if you don't know anything, you kind of just spout off acting like you know things. And if you know a ton, then, you know, you really know what you're talking about and you can speak with confidence. But if you're anywhere in the middle, you know, the average or above average, you kind of have these syndromes where you're not very sure about yourself and, you know, you're afraid to speak out of line or be criticized. But it's good to see that you've, you know, gotten out of those traps.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a never ending battle, too. Like, I would say that, you know, there's like an upper limit threshold that you come to at different points in your life, whether it be financial or professional. And so when you hit up against that, that's when it kind of flares up again. And so it's just really key to remind yourself that it's okay. And you just have to be one step ahead of whoever you're trying to help or serve, you know?
Yeah, definitely. So you and Zach touched on a little bit how there are like very common excuses for not traveling more. So just like, I don't have enough money. I don't have enough time. I have too many responsibilities. But on the other side of that, a struggle that we see some people having is that they really love to travel and they could make the time and they do have the finances or, you know, they could save up, but they also really love something else in their lives. And maybe it's their job or their friends, or they don't want to leave their family for that long. Or, you know, like I said, their career. And so you mentioned that there are ways that we can be strategic about traveling for work and then essentially marrying your love for travel and your career. Can you dive into a little bit more about what that means?
Yes, absolutely. I think that I used to work for the auto show industry, and we had to travel often to go to the different cities where the auto shows are. And it's not the old school auto show girls that you may be thinking. I mean, this is actually very high class, you know, wearing super expensive clothes and, you know, knowing we were called product specialists. We know about the cars, but we had to travel to several cities. And the thing is, I had the ability to travel to places that I wouldn't have normally traveled. And so what I think is, look for a job that actually affords you the ability to travel where you can marry your two loves. So when I say be strategic, I mean like if you, like, for example, as a speaker, if I had an engagement where I got hired to speak in Miami, okay, well, why don't I, you know, they're going to fly me down to Miami. And I did this a lot with my car show job where I got them to, you know, they were going to fly me in for the work, but then I just book a trip either on the beginning or the end of that trip. And they'll pay for your in and out flights because they were going to pay for them anyway, as long as they're within reason. And then you just find a way to sort of bookend your work travel with your travel for pleasure. So just making sure that you're not just thinking, oh, well, I'm in and out in a couple of days, but you're figuring out how can you get your company or to basically pay for you to travel. And if that isn't something that works with your 9-to-5, then thinking about strategic goals on how to, like, there may be a conference that is happening that could make you better. So you may have to pitch certain things. So that's another strategic strategy. Like, oh, you know what I think would make me a more productive employee? This conference, or I can go and represent our company here because we don't have a voice here. And I found, and you know, so it's like, if you can be smart enough to think about how this benefits the company, but also gets you what you want, which is to travel to that place, you know, that's when you start to be able to leverage your creativity and your job's expense account.
Yeah. So those are some really good points about ways to be strategic about, you know, taking advantage of when you already have to travel for work. And we're both information consultants. So we do a little bit of that traveling for work and trying to bookend or try to suggest that we go speak at a conference so we can travel somewhere cool. So with regards to, you know, speaking with your employers and getting them to be a little bit flexible with that, do you have some tips for starting that conversation?
Yeah, I think it's important that you, one, that you sort of know your boss's, I don't want to say pain points, but like what is really important to them. So if they're about productivity, if they're about leadership, like what are they constantly professing as an employer? And so just like in marketing, which if you do any kind of online marketing or any marketing in general, you have to speak the language of your audience. It's the same thing. How can you position it in such a way that the almost like to make your boss think that it's his or her idea? Like you've always been saying this. So I started looking up conferences. So I think it would just be first have all of your ducks in a row, have your research done, have looked into flight costs. And then maybe even have, if you're bold enough, you know, if you feel like you could do this, look into what this would translate to in the terms of ROI, return on investment. So if you send me here, here's what I'm willing to do for the company, which is not only go to the conference, represent us, but come back and, you know, do a series where we help promote leadership more and get more productivity out of our employees. So it's that. So I think it would be just one, thinking of what your boss or your company is always talking about and show that, one, it shows that you take initiative, it shows creativity, it shows ownership, which I mean, is so rare in employees today where most people are just kind of like, you know, that whole office space thing of like, how much work do you do in an actual like day of work? And it's like, well, I don't know, like an hour, 2 hours, but like that whole thing of like, you're saying, I'm here, I'm invested, I'm gonna go and represent our company or go get these goodies. And, you know, with your travel schedule, you can't go, so I'll go, that kind of thing. So I think just thinking of how, what would be important for the boss or that whoever the decision maker is, and then to speak their language, but have all your facts together so that if they ask you questions, because it all comes down to confidence, right? So one, you'd have to be bold to even present this. So when you talked about marrying your loves, because people have other things that they find that they love, agreed. It's hard to, you know, but it's really, you know, being confident enough to go in and make that proposal. So I would say get your research together, get your languaging that you know that they speak, and then just go for it.
So it really serves two purposes, because you're really able to take advantage of your job and your position where you are able to travel and you get to experience more and maybe experience more cities. But at the same time, if you do really love your career, then you're moving your way up and impressing your managers and your bosses. So it's a really good idea.
Yeah, I think the 4-hour work week, and I'm not saying that Tim Ferriss like was saying that you only work 4 hours, but I think I really got the idea down from that book, which was just like, come up with a creative way. Like, I think just what's been great about millennials is coming up with new ways to like redefine or imagine the way that we work. And so being able to go with a concrete plan of like, not like I'm an asset to you, right? But you know, I'm leasing my talent. So I should be able to say, this is what I'm willing to lease it for. And I think people just kind of like, it doesn't mean you have to be an entrepreneur to have the life you want. If you like the security of a 9-to-5 or you really love your career, like you just said, I think it's just being bold enough to say, okay, but these are the terms I'm willing to work on. Or here's some ideas on how I can, I've reinvented my role and I would love to see if we can make that happen. So
I found that a lot of times if it makes no difference to a boss either, they'll be fine with it. Like if you're going to go on a trip that ends on Friday, and you say that you'll take care of the, you know, lodging over the weekend and just return Monday for the same price, it's no big deal to them. And you get a weekend in whatever city you were going to be in.
Right. Absolutely. Because it can be difficult to see the city during the conference or during the trip. But if you can figure out a way, right, to like work it in and even somehow get the trip, the travel portion to be somehow beneficial to the company too. But like you said, right, bottom line, if this is what we were going to spend anyway, and even if you can find a way to save them money on what they were going to spend here, and then also just kind of like, you know, come out the same with that, you being able to stay longer in that city, that would be awesome.
Yeah, so we wanted to circle back to your Argentina trip as well, because we actually, about a year and a half ago, spent 6 weeks working remotely from there, and we loved our experience. We always love hearing other people's stories. So tell us a little bit more about your trip and maybe some of your stories or what your favorite experience was.
Yeah. So we were there for 2 weeks. We spent 4 days in Palermo. The first four days in Argentina, in Buenos Aires, in Palermo, because much like many big cities, they have like little neighborhoods or pockets in that big city. People that have been to Argentina know that, but I didn't know that until I traveled there. Then we went down south to Calafate and walked on a glacier, which was definitely one of the highlights of my trip. I mean, just like seeing glaciers, but being able to walk on one with these crampons, these ice, like I don't know if you've ever seen them, but they're like these spike things that go on your boots so that you can actually have traction when you're walking on ice. And then we went up to Calafate, where the cataratas are, and Iguazu. I'm sorry, not Calafate. Sorry, we went to Iguazu, where the cataratas, the waterfall is, the eighth wonder of the world, Iguazu Falls. It was very tropical, very humid, and it rained the whole time, but it was amazing to see that much water and saying that years ago, these waterfalls didn't exist. You know, it's like the change in the climate. And then we came back to Buenos Aires, and I have to say that minus obviously seeing the waterfall, seeing the glacier, one of my favorite experiences was staying in San Telmo, which is the oldest part of Buenos Aires. And seeing that long market, I can't think of what it's called, but on Sunday, it just has like imagine a farmer's market that goes on 4 miles and goes all day on Sunday and just was amazing. Get all the trinkets and tango and it was amazing. And I actually did get hurt in Argentina, like stitches hurt and free healthcare also. So that was probably the biggest fear of my trip is like, oh my God, how much is this going to cost? And then it didn't cost me a dime.
Yeah, your trip sounds a whole lot like what we did too, because we stayed in Palermo. We stayed in Old Palermo, which I don't remember how to say in Spanish or what they call it, but there was like Palermo Hollywood, and then there's the older part of town that we stayed in. It was great. And then we went to Calafate too, and that we didn't walk on the glacier like you did, but it was just great even being that close to it and seeing it.
Yeah.
And really, like, it shattered any expectation of what I thought a glacier should look like. It was 100 times better.
Absolutely. It was huge. It was like, oh my gosh. And then we got to drink real glacier. Like, well, we got to, they poured us water from the glacier and then also whiskey. So you can have the glacier ice or whatever, but I'm not much of a whiskey drinker. So I preferred the water, but it was just so cool. And it's all blue, but it's not really blue because of the water, the reflection. So that was really awesome.
I still look back at our pictures from both being in El Calafate and then in southern Chile and thinking like, these don't even look real. Like, it looks like somebody computer generated all of this, but it's just pictures that I took on my, you know, smartphone. So it's just crazy how beautiful things look and how like almost alien things look to us because we're not used to seeing things and quite like that.
You know what's really funny is when we came back from Argentina or we told people we were going to Argentina, we got constantly asked, why Argentina? And I think that's a really interesting thing because it was like, why not? And I think it's it's interesting how we've been sort of conditioned to only go to, like, you know, tropical locations, or these certain countries are sort of highlighted to us, like these are the ones you go to. But there's so much richness of culture and people and experiences in all the countries. And so it's sort of like saying, why travel? It's like, why not? Yeah. Like, why not go? Because it gives you perspective. If you spend all your time in your country, in your neighborhood, in your community, you don't have that depth of perspective that traveling gives you. So
yeah, I think a lot of times we just don't hear about anything happening in Argentina. We don't know anything about it, you know, until my current job. I had never met anybody from Argentina, and now I work with a ton of Argentinians. But it's like, we experience the same thing where it's like, we're telling people we're going to Argentina, and the images that are flying through their heads are like us huddling in a hut in the forest, you know, dodging bullets from communists or something. So
I know,
but
I was like, what?
Yeah,
wasn't bad.
Not at all. I mean, and a lot of people call Buenos Aires like the Paris of South America, I think. And I haven't been to Paris, so I can't really comment on that, but it was a completely modern city. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I can understand people calling it that, because it did feel like almost a little European. Mm-hmm. So it was great.
Well, you know, they had a big migration from Italy. So I know you noticed how much pizza was there, and you were like, wait, aren't we in Argentina?
Yeah. And then they're, them speaking Spanish almost sounds like Italian to us. Like, I'm used to hearing Mexicans or maybe Cubans. And then I see my coworkers speaking Spanish to each other, and I'm like, I can't understand a word they're saying when they speak to each other. And it sounds not like Spanish to me.
Yeah, that's what a lot of my friends from California said, that when we have a large Spanish speaking population being so close to Mexico. And typically more Mexican, Salvadoran, and I forget what the other ones are, but they were the other countries that migrate, have big migrations here. But they were just saying, like, when you get down there, because I know a bit of Spanish, they're like, you're not going to understand them. And we had to get used to the YY being a sh instead of a y sound. So we'd say ella, and they'd say asha.
Yeah, that was challenge for us too.
Yeah, we were like, what? And they'd be like, sherba mate. And we're like, what? So it took us a while to catch on to that. But overall, we kind of understood them, but it was funny. We wanted to practice our Spanish, and everybody wanted to practice their English. So it was very difficult to, like, they're like, oh, you're from America. Like, let's practice our English. And we're like, well, we want to practice our Spanish.
Yeah, we had a little bit of an advantage because, so Zach has very dark hair and very pale skin, and he actually kind of blended right in. So everyone that we would interact with would immediately start speaking Spanish. And it wasn't until he started speaking that they would be like, oh, you're from America. And then they would try to speak English. But we at least got that first few minutes of trying to practice.
That's good. That's good. Yeah. People thought we were Brazilian because I guess that would be the most they see people of darker skin is, you know, so they would always say Brasiliana, like, no, American. So
with your coaching and your speaking engagements and your travel and just working with people to encourage them to get out there and travel more, what have been some of your best experiences?
I think just, you know, like, you go to cities and they have these stereotypes, right? Like, people in New York are cold, people from LA are flaky, people from, you know, Boston have the accents. And some of those are true. I mean, you're going to find truth to everything you believe. But I think my best experiences is just the people, the conversations you have, the stories, and how, like, people have different perspectives from where they live. Like, just, I mean, we're in Argentina. We met so many people that were just so lovely and, you know, just have, like, I love people's stories. So, I mean, I just remember we went to a bar when we were in San Telmo, and we sat next to this couple, and we just talked all night about, like, you know, just their experiences and what it's like being in Argentina. One of my favorite questions to ask people, because I did the same thing with a young lady who had was born maybe in America, but had gone back to Korea. But I said, what's your favorite thing about being, you know, Argentinian, and your least favorite thing, you know, just to get people's perspective, like, what do they think about their own countries or their own, you know, experiences? And so I think that just the best experiences that I've had, without pinpointing a specific one, is just the conversations with the people and how open they'll be if you're open to them, and not walking in with this, like, preconceived notion. Because I remember I was helping an Uber driver in Argentina try to find a lady who was looking for an Uber driver. They have Uber down there. And she was speaking only in English. And he spoke pretty much only Spanish. And she was just like trying to tell him where she was. And I was thinking like, does she know she's in Argentina? Like, like, you know, because it was just like, he should know where I'm at. And I'm like, yeah, maybe. But like, we kind of have to assimilate to some degree. And so I think it's really important that we respect wherever we're at and really go in wanting to sample and taste the culture, but not sort of supplanting our own culture on top of it is, I think, the best experiences.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. Places have their stereotypes and sometimes it's for a reason, but a lot of times those can be turned into a positive or just, you know, something interesting about them and not necessarily bad at all. And, you know, when Sarah and I traveled around the U.S. and we were in our RV, a lot of times we stayed in really, like, you know, not even on the map cities and things like that. And I can't think of any stop we really had that we didn't enjoy. So I think there's really something to be found in every place. And, you know, especially when you're traveling internationally, it sounds like there's even more to learn and experience and get people's perspective on.
Yeah, it's just being open. Like, I think, like, we went to Sedona not too long ago and stayed on Bureau of Land Management land. I don't know. I'm sure you guys experienced this maybe with your RV, but it's just like amazing, this idea that you can like kind of like stay on land that's not totally developed, but there's people that are nomadic and live out on these places and, you know, sort of, I don't want to say off the grid, but it's really interesting to travel and have different experiences. And I think you have to be mindful of what you're expecting when you travel, because if you're going into it expecting to find fake people, like in LA, for example, or mean people in New York, I have found kind people everywhere because that's what I see.
Yep.
So
through all of this and your, you know, speaking career and your coaching career and just traveling for fun, have there been any challenges, whether it's, you know, in the moment, you know, a challenge on a trip or a personal challenge that you've had to overcome?
You know, I know I was trying to think, like, you know, I think the biggest thing is maybe sometimes, you know, not really knowing the language, right? And missing out on experiences sometimes. But I was like trying to think of a specific time that I had a challenge when I traveled. Cause I don't know, since I'm a mindset coach, I really do look for the positive. And of course there can be, you know, lost luggage and people tell all kinds of stories like that. Before we went to Argentina, we were told how people steal bags there. You got to keep your wallet safe, you know, because it's such an impoverished country. But I didn't have any of those experiences. So I can honestly say that minus a delayed flight or, and I haven't even really had lost luggage ever, which I've been very fortunate. But I'd have to say probably just the worst experience would just be like, sometimes I did have a hotel that I stayed in once for work that had bed bugs. That would be the worst experience I had, but they didn't bite me. So that was nice. They must have gotten full on the previous.
Hopefully, you
person.
Didn't bring them home.
No, good. I did not. And so it would just be like, you know, telling the hotel. I think probably the worst experiences I've ever had in my travels, I'll say this because, you know, we've had situations like I do remember one. I was traveling and they did not clean the lavatory on the stopover in a city before they turned the flight around. And so due to the fact that it was a long haul flight, they had to make a stop in another city that was unscheduled because they had to have the lavatory like emptied because we were using it too much. You know, obviously it hadn't been, you know, emptied from the previous flight. So that was frustrating because I felt very much like, I think what I've noticed, which was what I was leading up to, is this customer service, like some of these people acting a bit more entitled, like not really giving you, like when they mess up, just kind of saying our bad, but not just our bad, but here's what we're willing to do to make up for it. Because I had a flight that was delayed and I think it was Southwest and they were like, you know what, because your flight was something, like they already sent me something, say, sorry about that, here's some extra stuff. And then there's other companies, usually the big guys, United, American, and I can't think of who the other one is right now, Delta, that they don't like, they don't always necessarily fall on their sword. It's just kind of like, oh, sorry. Like, you know, so I think I was very upset about that because, you know, like people missed connections. Some people chose not to get back on the plane because they were so upset because they weren't going to make their flights. And so it wasn't so much that it, you know, of course, I was going to get home later. So it was going to be harder to get someone to pick me up from the airport. But I think it's just those experiences of feeling like there's a lack of customer service in the travel industry sometimes of like, you know, really taking care of the people that pay you money and giving them their just due when you mess up. Because then I'll go and I'll be an evangelist. You know, you'll turn that person, that bad situation into an evangelist versus somebody who's going, don't fly them. I had such a bad experience. So.
Yeah, makes sense. I can only imagine what that conversation with the, you know, what's it called? The, you know, flight I can't think of it. I just blanked on it. I had this question ready and everything. But the tower, the control tower, right. Must have been like between the pilots needing to make an unscheduled stop to empty their tanks.
Exactly.
That's something I've never heard before. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just like, really? Like, and like whoever didn't do their job, right? At that one stop, now just inconvenienced about 200 people. So.
Yeah. So do you have any resources that you really like and recommend to people, whether it has to do with travel or just mindset, or confidence, or anything like that?
Yeah. So speaking about travel first, since we're really talking about travel here, and I mean, there's a traveling of the mind too. Like, first, I want to say, as far as mindset, meditation is big, like any kind of mindfulness you can do or visualization. So if you're someone who doesn't feel like you can travel, that will most likely be your experience. So start to travel in your mind. Start to see yourself in those places. I mean, it's a really personal story for me, but my mom passed away last year and she always wanted to go to Egypt. Like that was her dream. She wanted to be an archaeologist. She chose not to be an archaeologist because she was deterred away from it by her parents. She had children, you know, life got in the way and that, you know, she passed away never having gone to Egypt. And that was something that I've always wanted to take her. But, you know, so I have a plan for at least going to Egypt and leaving some piece of my mom there. So she'll get to travel there, you know, somehow, some way. But I think one is like set a goal. Right? Like one, set a goal, like you're going to travel. Because I have to say that I never thought travel was possible, but it was just a matter of making a decision. Like I'm going to go to this trip. And then you put all the pieces in order and it happens versus saying, I wish I could travel. And that's all you're going to have is wishes. So really just kind of like doing visualizations every day, I would say. Like there's these apps out here who help you meditate, but also just seeing yourself traveling and then setting a goal saying by this time and just start making the arrangements. The money will come. I know what you're concerned about. I don't have the cash. Okay, well, don't worry about that. Just say, okay, I'm going to Argentina in May. And I wasn't, I'm being 100% honest, I did not know how I was going to make it happen. But it happened because I stuck to it and I kept moving towards it. The second thing is the travel websites. So when we were in Argentina, and I'm sure you guys experienced this, but it is very difficult to travel from place to place in Argentina due to bus, train. Just they don't have the best infrastructure like we do where you can just hop on a plane and, you know, get a bus instead and things like that because they run on different days and everything routes through Buenos Aires. So it seems sort of like ridiculous routes. But we could not find flights that matched up with the timing because we needed everything to be on 4-day sprints, you know, like 4-day stays so we could actually enjoy the full trip and see the places we wanted to see. Skyscanner. Really helped. And other websites do this too, but I had the experience with Skyscanner. So in Argentina, I can't speak about all countries, but this may be true for other countries. They are attempting currently to promote travel from their own citizens. So if you change the currency to the currency of the country, you can get the flights that may not be available to you as an outsider. That's for inter-country travel. This doesn't it may work for out, you know, flying in and flying out, but it definitely worked for us for inter-country travel. There was flights I couldn't make work for prices and all that. And then suddenly I changed the currency to Argentinian pesos and the flights that I wanted were available and in my price range. And I was able, and if you have a credit card that doesn't have foreign transaction fees, it works out perfectly. Now you may feel a certain way about that. Like, I don't know, that's for the people of Argentina. I'm all about resourcefulness. So I made it happen for myself.
Yeah, we did similar things where my coworkers and friends down there noticed that they wanted to go to Uruguay, I think to Colonia or something, and that it was cheaper if you paid with like an American credit card than if you tried to pay in pesos. Ah. So, you know, I was letting them borrow my credit card and then put their charges on it, and then they paid me pesos, right. And then that kept me from having to pay the ATM fees. So it was kind of a win-win.
Look at that. So yeah, being very showing ingenuity, because yeah, that really helps. But yeah, that's what I would say is just, I also use the points website, because we flew first class on points. So if you're already spending the money, and then some people are anti-credit cards, you don't ever have to carry credit card debt. You just sign up for the sign-up bonuses. And, you know, there's several points websites that can explain it to you, but definitely you can fly first class. I don't necessarily believe in paying what they charge for first class, but if you're spending on average in 3 months, or you can figure out a way to spend it, and there's several ways to, you know, figure that out, but figure out a way to spend what they do for the sign-in bonuses. You can travel, you can get 2 round-trip tickets, maybe in coach, maybe first class or business class, but it's worth it. You know, if you can take the flight, which is a huge part of the expense of travel, then you can, you know, take that out of the budget. Then all of a sudden you have more money for, you know, like souvenirs or maybe more high ticket experiences. Because I got to say, once you go first class, it's really hard to go back to coach. But you can get over that if you don't want to go first class and save all your points and just get maximum, like you're going to travel a ton. But just think of how much you can get out of those points to be able to see the places you want to see. So.
Yeah, that sounds nice. I've never done first class, so I understand the struggles of coach.
Yeah.
And anytime people are afraid to fly, I just tell them, like, there's nothing to be afraid of except just being uncomfortable for hours on end. Just imagine being in, like, you know, uncomfortable small bus or something, and that's what it'll be like.
Exactly. But
I imagine that all changes if you're able to swing first class.
Yeah, because you have this bed that lays all the way flat. They're bringing you food constantly, and alcohol if you so choose to partake, and you've got your own seat, and it was lovely. Like, I was definitely like a kid in a candy store because I had never flown first class before, and I have not flown since. I've taken a few trips, but it's not worth it to cash your points in on domestic travel. Like, you are looking for those long-haul flights, because if you're going to go first class, you want a minimum of a 5, 6, 7, 8 hour and plus flight, because you want the maximum time to enjoy it. If you're only on a flight for 3 hours, you can sit in coach. It's not worth it, like, to cash your points in. If you could pay, you want to save $300, but if you're getting a $10,000 flight for free, you know, like, you got to do the math. But
yeah, makes sense. It's always, you know, like, I wish I would have done first class when going to, like, you know, Japan or Argentina or something like that, because we just felt terrible by the end of it. So it might have been worth the ridiculous price for us to just not feel like we'd been beaten with a baseball bat by the time we got there.
Right. But I'm all about the resourcefulness, because yeah. I get it. Like, everybody can't afford the ridiculous price. And so it's not about, you know, and even if you could afford it, is that really where you want to spend your money? I would rather stay in a hotel while I'm there than just do it on the flight. So for me, it's like, if you can figure out the credit card points game and you've got, you know, decent credit, like, work that system and you pay your credit off, you know, you pay your full balance off at the time. So the credit card companies don't really like people like that, because they don't make money on you, because they want to make money on the interest.
Yeah, I think they call them deadbeats.
Yeah. Well, actually, they call them, well, yeah, they're called churners in the industry, but I don't know what the, yeah, they probably call them that. But I don't care. I'm not trying to make Chase happy. I'm trying to go on my trips. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So. Definitely recommend looking into, if you're somebody who wants to travel more and possibly have more experiences out of the same amount of money that you're spending anyway on groceries and, you know, whatever, that's the best way to do it.
So through all your experience helping people, whether it is through travel or just, you know, boosting their confidence or helping them straighten out their lives, could you pick one piece of advice that you think would help people who really want to live a travel-oriented lifestyle and travel more, or maybe even, you know, travel full-time at least for a little while? Like, what would you tell somebody who had that goal in mind?
Well, I think just do it. I know, to borrow the cliche thing from Nike, but I think we spend so much time, and, you know, going back to the story I told you about my mother, like, you know, she was 67 years old, and I think she was just about to turn 68. And I know that, you know, she, to her credit, she did see a lot of the United States, but I know she would have wanted more experiences. So I think it's just like, you don't know, you know, when something could happen to your health, or, you know, I'm in general, I don't think this way. I don't think like tomorrow I could get hit by a bus. I hate that expression. But my point is that you don't know what's going to happen. Maybe you're going to meet the love of your life, and then you're going to want to have kids right away. And then it's going to make it that much more difficult. So I just say, go now, do it, and just put the steps in order to like actually make it happen. Too many of us spend life wishing away instead of just doing it. And so just get out there and go after it, because and nomadic lifestyle, digital nomads, is a big thing, especially if you don't have any entanglements, no kids, no spouse or significant other. Go be a digital nomad, or find a spouse or significant other that wants to do that. And there are people that do it with kids. So it's possible, but it's just like, just go do it. And I know that sounds really like simple, but it's just like, that's what it takes, is like making a choice versus just sitting there and going, I hope.
Yeah. I think that's great advice. And I don't think, you know, you're ever too young or too old to do this either. Cause, you know, I've seen people my age or younger saying that, oh, we'll do it someday, or maybe that RV thing sounds nice for when we retire. But I've also met people who are finally retirement age, and now their health is acting up and they can't do it. So they've worked, you know, some office job that they probably didn't really care for their entire life for this moment that's not going to come for them. And it's pretty heartbreaking.
Yeah. I think it's that whole thing. Like, it's like when you start to lease your freedom, like, I love the name of your podcast, which is Thinking Liberty. And it's this whole thing of like, what would happen if you really gave yourself permission, right, to just go live the life you wanted to on your own terms? Like, the idea of even living my life on my own terms in a 9-to-5 is so foreign to people, or traveling consistently. Yet now there are people that work 9-to-5s but work from home. So there are so many new ways of things sort of, you know, like the trends of the times, and adapting to this new lifestyle of people sort of living over the internet and such. And yet we're still busy clinging to these old paradigms and ideals of like, well, it's about, you know, like, I'm supposed to be here every day. And it's like, well, have you really gone in and fought for the life that you want, and asked for it and demanded it in a way, not going in your boss and say, you're going to travel, you're going to make me travel or nothing or else, but finding a way to get what you want. And I think we just need to do it. Like you said, your health, so many things can come up. You know, there's always going to be, when you don't really just put the rubber to the road, something comes up that tells you it's not the right time. But if you just do it, if you go, you know, you like buy the ticket, then all of a sudden things just start to fall in place. So that would be the other thing I would say, buy the ticket, just buy it, put the deposit down, make the arrangements, ask for the time off. You don't even know where the money's going to come from. Just start putting things in place. And then suddenly everything happens and conspires to make it be.
Yeah. And you say you don't even know where the money's going to come from. And, you know, when you first said that, I didn't really know what you meant. But now that I think about it a little bit, it's like, we ask this question to a lot of our guests and a lot of just our friends and stuff about like how they got into the position where they can travel now. And I find that a lot of times people have trouble even explaining how they got here. Like, I don't know, it just kind of happened, or I just got lucky. You know, I wanted this sort of job and it just kind of fell on my lap, or, you know, I didn't have that much trouble finding the position that I wanted. So, yeah, I think you're exactly right that sometimes with the right mindset and the right goal, things just tend to happen. And it's not because, you know, random chance or luck, but because you're in the mindset to make it happen.
Absolutely. That's the whole thing. And then like luck is where preparation meets opportunity.
Exactly.
And so if you just make, you just say, I'm doing this. Suddenly, all of a sudden, a friend calls out of the blue and goes, I got 2 tickets. Do you want to go? And you're like, what the heck? And you can't explain it. But it's like just making that small shift in your mind that it's possible opens doors for you in ways that you probably won't realize. And, you know, Steve Jobs has a great quote. One of my mentors always shares with us. You cannot connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them backwards. Someday you'll be able to look back and see how that all fell into your lap. But it's not always abundantly clear. But the fact of the matter is it always comes back from a choice point when you decided that you could have that kind of life. And then suddenly that sort of life fell into place for you.
Awesome. Well, just to wrap up here, do you want to tell us about any projects you have going on or anything you want to plug or advertise? And then also how listeners can follow you online?
Absolutely. So right now, I'm going to be doing a webinar next week. I don't know when this is going to air. So if not, you can get in touch with me. But in general, I am helping entrepreneurs or small business owners travel via video, basically to get their message out to the world and develop and create the authority that they need to attract their ideal clients. So they're chasing them instead of them chasing their clients. Okay. So in other words, like once people see you everywhere and you become ubiquitous or, you know, like omnipresent or everywhere around your subject, they're like, maybe I need to hire this person. So I show people how, with a specific strategy, how to do that. And I'm doing some trainings around that. And so you can follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/ my first and last name, Bryn Drescher. You can also follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Bryn Drescher, my first and last name. And then for my group, it's called Live Lights in Action. And you can join that. And I'll be doing regular trainings on how to up your video game to get clients on autopilot. So.
All right. Sounds great. And we'll repeat all of that in the outro in case anybody missed it. And then also you'll be able to check the show notes page at thinkingliberty.com/28 for all the resources we've mentioned here and then ways to follow Bryn. So
awesome.
Thank you so much for coming on. This is a great conversation and yeah, can't wait for this to air and for people to hear this.
Awesome. I can't wait either. Thank you so much, Zach and Sarah. It's been my pleasure.
All right. So I hope everybody enjoyed that interview with Bryn Drescher and maybe knows a little bit more what we were talking about at the beginning of this episode when we were talking about our experiences with being able to travel within our jobs and within our careers and, you know, just kind of putting the idea out there to your boss that you're willing and able and maybe, you know, tell them a few things that makes it more enjoyable for you, whether it's bringing a partner or traveling a certain way or going to certain places. So I think, you know, Bryn had a lot of good information and a lot of good ideas there. So be sure to follow her on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. She's another one who got all the good, you know, usernames there. It's just Bryn Drescher, and that's BrynDrescher for all of those, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And she has her Live Lights in Action group where she does training and coaching and things like that to help you become, you know, a subject matter expert in your field and really get out there in front of people in the business world and become the go-to person. So we'll link to that in the show notes page at thinkingliberty.com/28 for anybody to go and find that group and her Facebook and her Instagram. And as always, go give us a like and a follow on Facebook and Twitter. So on Facebook, we're facebook.com/listentl. And on Twitter, we're at listentl. And I'm sure on either of them now, maybe we're big enough to where you can just search Thinking Liberty. So you can give that a try if you, you know, can't remember our weird username, listentl. And then also be sure to go to thinkingliberty.com where you'll see this episode and our past episodes, and you'll see ways to subscribe there. So be sure to do that if you've just been listening to these, you know, maybe one-off whenever you see them. Facebook is not great about telling everybody who follows us, you know, when we make a post. I think, you know, sometimes we get like 11 people out of all of our followers Facebook actually decides to show something to. So really the best way to keep up with this and get all of our content is going to be to subscribe, whether it's on iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, whatever your podcast app is or however you want to take in podcasts, we should be on there. So be sure to subscribe to us and be able to get those every time we have a new episode, rather than allowing, you know, Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg to decide when you get to listen to Thinking Liberty. So check that out. Facebook, Twitter, thinkingliberty.com, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Thinking Liberty. Subscribe to the show for free on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher at thinkingliberty.com. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, articles by Zach and Sarah, and more. We'll see you next time.